Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce Garner Ted Armstrong of Ambassador College with The World Tomorrow. In this series of programs, we will tell you something of the problems of the world today, how they will affect you, and their solution in The World Tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, Garner Ted Armstrong.
Could anyone have predicted only a few weeks before the latest Middle Eastern war that the oil crisis would have drawn Europe closer together, but farther away from the United States? That a big developing rift between Europe and the United States and between Japan and the United States would be a natural outgrowth of a Middle Eastern war? Well, if you didn't, if others didn't, this program did. For well over two decades, this program, first on radio and then on television, and also supported by the Plain Truth magazine, has been talking about the eventuality of a coming United States of Europe, no matter what it may be called, at least some form of a European Union. Before live audiences, over the past many, many years, I've been talking about how Europe would be forged together as a result of some catalytic occurrence in the Middle East. There is a specific prophecy, believe it or not, in the Bible. That's right, an obscure, old, forgotten part of the Bible that talks about some United Arabian or North African, but at least a southern area south of the area of Palestine, a block of nations perpetrating some overt act against Europe, a northern power, which would result in armies entering in to that area of the Middle East from the European area. Now, year after year, in interviews with leaders in Europe at all levels, and I was over there during the Willy Brandt trip to the United States in the spring of 1973, at which time I had opportunity to talk to Etienne Davignon, who was the political secretary of the European Common Market. I had a chance to talk to the defense minister of West Germany, to the head of the Christian Socialist Union of Bavaria, to the president of the Bundestag, and to other leaders in West Germany as well as in Brussels, Belgium, and other countries in Europe, to leaders in industry down in Bordeaux in France and the like. I had commonly asked these people for many, many years about the eventuality of a multilateral European force intervening in the Middle East in the case of, first, a threat to the territorial and national integrity of the Israelis as a nation. Secondly, a threat to the holy places of the three major religions of the world. And certainly the Vatican must be taken into account, and Vatican influence in European government and among European peoples. I had asked these questions nearly always, and clear back into the early 60s when I would ask that question, as I did, of Franz Josef Strauss and others. They would say, well, perhaps it's much too early to consider any sort of a multilateral European force at this time. Well, as the years have gone by, more and more leaders in Europe have begun to consider the creation of a common European security force. But let's go back in time a little bit, because many, many years previous to this, we were talking about the eventual creation of some sort of a European Union. It doesn't have to grow out of the European Economic Community or the Common Market, originally called Euromark. It could grow out of a complete fragmentation of that present economic union. But eventually, it is going to be a political union. It began as an economic union. Maybe that will fragment and something else replace it. The six, you remember? But then, do you remember? Because an on-the-street survey not so long ago revealed the rather shocking statistics to me that less than half of the Americans asked about what was the European Economic Community. They wanted to know, the pollsters asked the question, what is the EEC? What does it mean to you? The European Economic Community, or the Common Market. Over half of those questions had never heard of it. That's right. That means that all those years during de Gaulle's visions of grandeur, it means clear back during the Kennedy administration and his visit to Berlin when he said, Ich bin ein Berliner, and got such a massive response. It means all those years of Cold War. It means all those years of the articles in the Plain Truth magazine or the broadcast of the World Tomorrow program. It means all the articles in the newspapers and magazines in the United States, interviews in the U.S. News and World Report, which talked about a growing togetherness in Europe, of the burying of the hatchet between the old foes of West Germany and of France. It means all of those articles that had to do with various favoritism or protectionism for American agriculturalists and what that was doing to the common market, the imbalance in trade, the balance of payments deficit, the growing weakness of the American dollar, but the emerging strength of the German Deutschmark, or of the franc in France, went completely over the heads of the average American on the street. The average American did not know and couldn't care less about what was happening inside Europe. Perhaps there was only one voice in the wilderness saying anything about it at all. But little could anyone realize that what was happening in the Middle East, seemingly another terrible conflict between antagonistic neighbors, would have such geopolitical, meaning globally, politically important overtones for the big powers of all of the world. The stage was set for this growing move toward unity that is happening as an outgrowth directly of the energy crisis for Europeans a long time ago. First, as I said, it was Euromart. It was a European economic community and a move toward first economic unity and eventually full political unity and the creation of a common defense force. If you remember some of the problems that occurred along the way, and probably the average person does not, first, Europe was losing a great deal of confidence in the United States as a result of our protracted involvement in Vietnam. And as the American public began to riot, and as our institutions become threatened more and more, and became threatened, especially during the late 60s, as a result of American disenchantment over Vietnam, our cities in flames sometimes, campuses seething centers of turmoil and revolt, the government under virtual siege with one massive demonstration in Washington after another. If it wasn't about the civil rights movement, it was the Vietnam War veterans throwing their medals into the fire, or like as not. This all took its toll on American prestige in Europe, and it certainly was not lost upon European leadership, depending primarily upon the U.S. nuclear umbrella and NATO forces, meaning U.S. troops on European soil, predominantly in West Germany. It was not lost on them that the United States was growing very weary of being world policemen, that we were growing very much reluctant to send troops for involvement in bushfire-type limited or conventional warfare in far-flung areas of the world. A growing concern in European leadership, too, began over the United States and the Soviet Union and its new détente, over Nixon's trip to China and wondering what this meant for Europe. The imbalance of trade was of constant concern to the economists and the industrialists inside the common market. Maybe you didn't hear of Servan Schreiber's book, The American Challenge, and Franz Josef Strauss's book, Challenge and Response, but The American Challenge, widely read in Europe, an instant bestseller in Europe, had to do with American investments inside the common market. American imports into the United States that appear to be foreign cars are oftentimes heavily invested in by American companies abroad. And because of heavy investment inside many a manufacturing concern inside the common market, French leadership, West German leadership predominantly, and others as they went along, became very concerned, hence the book by Servan Schreiber, called The American Challenge. Loss of confidence, though, in United States leadership was perhaps the most damaging and the most catalytic of all, and it only took the oil crisis, the energy crisis, to really become the spark that set the whole thing off. The United States of America has lost confidence in its own leadership. And as it has, so has the rest of the world. So Europe and the United States find themselves drifting further apart as European countries drift closer together. What does that mean for us? The creation of a common European army, nuclear armed, will they intervene in the Middle East? Well, stand by, because some of the most shocking things to come along in the news recently have been uttered by West German Chancellor Willy Brandt. I'll be back in a moment and tell you what he said very recently.
In the grounds of the United Nations building in New York stands the statue of a man wielding a large hammer, with a paraphrase of this well-known Bible prophecy engraved in its granite base. Men shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. But when? When will man's dreams become reality? What would it take for the Arabs and Israelis to lay down their arms? What would it take for Russia and China to become allies? What would it take for all nations to forge their armaments into farm tools? The whole gospel of Jesus Christ is about a soon-coming world government that will bring world peace. For a full understanding of this message of hope, request your free copy of What Do You Mean, kingdom of God. Read how mankind will learn to forge his swords into plowshares. Request, What Do You Mean, Kingdom of God? For your free copy, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
When Willy Brandt made a trip to the United States in the spring of 1973, he told President Nixon, early in Mr. Nixon's second term, that from now on, the United States must speak to Europe as if Europe were one entity. That no longer could the United States be involved in bilateral arrangements with France, or perhaps just with West Germany, but that Europeans wanted to be considered as one. Some very interesting things were said as a result of the Middle Eastern outbreak and the cutbacks of oil. But first, let's get that in perspective. Years and years ago, leaders in West Germany told me that West Germany was an economic giant, but a political dwarf. That eventually she would have to begin forging her own foreign policy and to speak among the leaders of nations in the world conversant with her size. That it made no sense that West Germany, in the confines of a European Union, economically and eventually a full political union, should be such a political dwarf and should be a pawn on the chess table of world power politics in between the Soviet Union and the United States, and obviously far more vulnerable to an instant Soviet attack, whether conventional or nuclear, than even is the United States of America. This has been a nagging concern inside Europe for many, many years. There are those in Germany who still, and many, I'm not talking about a few, but major political parties who still feel that the German question of reunification must eventually become a heated political issue and should eventually be resolved by the complete reunification of East and West Germany. And that has not by any means been dying some sort of a natural death inside West Europe. Now, during these many years of programs, I have cited such books as Germany Plots for the Kremlin by T.H. Teetons, The New Germany and the Old Nazis by the same author, Germany Will Rise Again by Mildred Schultz, Fire in the Ashes by Theodore White, Watcher Along the Rhine by Brian Connell, many other such authors. Perhaps they were sensational in nature, but when you learn, when you realize that out of the 15 top industrialists in the Ruhr, 14 of them were former card-carrying Nazis, that the thousands of teachers, philosophers, educators, burgermeisters, lesser officers in the army that comprised a part of Hitler's Wehrmacht in World War II are still alive, are still in positions of prestige and power in places all over West Germany. When you realize, as political observers have, and it has been reported on this program, that a severe threat to the West German economy, in short, terrible inflation, followed by depression, massive joblessness, a loss of the newfound affluence in Western Europe could lead to very unsavory political consequences. Now, we in the United States perhaps cannot understand that because we do not call for a strong leader and for virtual totalitarianism in the face of national calamities. But I cite already oil, the fantastic gyrations of the American stock market, what is happening vis-a-vis gold, the six nations who got together and decided to put it on the free market or to be able to sell it on the free market, thus the nearly $100 an ounce suddenly plummeted to about $84 an ounce. It may go lower. This, combined with the Arab oil cutbacks, is having serious consequences in Europe and in Japan. It is forging, perhaps very catalytically so, more and more European unity. In a moment, what Mr. Brandt said. But he did say that Europe must be treated now as one, and not expect bilateral arrangements between Britain and the United States and France, or the United States and West Germany as separate policies, but speak to Europe as one. What about the U.S. nuclear umbrella? The Europeans have been able to dwell, as it were, under that umbrella for these many years after World War II. And so, industrialists and economists have been happy, because while, on the one hand, they could depend upon U.S. leadership and security in the face of the Soviet threat, they could devote all their attention to the building up of a giant economic and industrial expansionist program which led Europe to its heights of prosperity never realized in all of her history, which is exactly where she is today. The United States, in the meantime, year after year, was missed and expressed that irritation to West German as well as West European leadership about their lack of participation in NATO. The United States was paying a terrible price, an imbalanced one, a disproportionate one, in the maintaining of U.S. troops on European soil, and of course the fantastic costs of keeping those troops there, as well as the large contingencies of American ships, the U.S. fleet, the 6th Fleet in the Mediterranean, costs a great deal of money to keep there, and to sort of equalize the Soviet threat of intrusions in the Mediterranean, which began to look in the 1960s, late 60s, like a Soviet lake. And Europe was not unaware of this because the Mediterranean has been called the soft underbelly of Europe. So they were concerned. In the highest political circles in Western Europe, the Mideast crisis was very embarrassing. They had to stand by and practically do nothing. Now, not only has it been economically embarrassing, it's been politically and geopolitically embarrassing. First, economically, they had to face Arab cutbacks resulting from United States policies toward Israel. Remember when you heard in the news that the United States had decided to support Israel and send F-4 Phantoms? Where did they go from? Some of them went from West Germany. And also, big Starlifters and C-5As, American aircraft, lifted off from West German bases, U.S. air bases in West German, on West German soil, to resupply Israel. The West German government was embarrassed when the Arabs decided they were going to cut back shipments to Europe, West Germany included, as a result of American resupplying of Israel from West German soil. And as a matter of fact, the West German government was even urged by the Arabs to demand that not only could not American troops or aircraft or ships take off from air bases or take off or sail from West German ports, but they could not even overfly that country. The embargo then imposed on the Netherlands. They've already had several Sunday no-driving days, and they were immediately hit in a far more stringent way than the United States was with the energy crisis. And because the Netherlands was transshipping refined products to the United States, as well as the fact that the Netherlands government had been in open support of the Israelis during the Mideast crisis. First, here is a very surprising statement in the context of all that has gone in the past and what we have said in this program for so many years. From Strasbourg, Reuters, we have Reuters on the college campus as well as UPI and AP. It comes right into our own offices here. West German Chancellor Willy Brandt today issued a pressing call for European political unity, warned that all individual foreign and defense policies by European countries would lead virtually nowhere. Accepting an honorary doctorate from the University of Strasbourg, Brandt said the Middle Eastern crisis had clearly shown the weakness of European nations on their own. If you added up the independent foreign and defense policies of the individual West European states, he said, their total from the world political viewpoint would be little more than zero. Again, reminding me of the statements of European leaders in earlier years that Western Europe, Western Germany in particular, is an economic giant but a political dwarf. It is only by binding them together that you obtain a policy worthy of the name, Mr. Brandt said. Only this whole can give weight to Europe on the international political plane. The political unity issue will be given an emergency top-level airing at the Copenhagen Common Market Summit Conference, of which Americans on the average know absolutely nothing. Our reporters will be there. Our men from on the spot in the offices we have in Dusseldorf, in Bonn, in other centers in Europe, such as Brussels and Zurich, or rather I should say Geneva, in London, will be attending those emergency top-level meetings. And we will have quotations, I'm sure, interviews, articles for the Plain Truth magazine from these men to give you. In that meeting, French President Georges Pompidou has called it, they hope to forge a joint European policy on the Middle East, in a clear reference to Europe's exclusion from the Middle East settlement to date. Brandt said, and I quote, the weakness of the individual states, as European states, has been clear to all during these past days and weeks. No one can doubt any longer that we are condemning ourselves to impotence and silence if we do not learn to shape a common policy. I have said for years that eventually you are going to find your headlines dominated by concern over the Middle East and Europe, and that eventually that concern is going to pale into insignificance, American concern over Vietnam. We are in the offing. We are in the moment just before that concern becomes a vivid one to the entirety of our country.
There's a new Europe coming. From the days when Europe was reduced to rubble at the end of World War II, the plain truth has been predicting its rebirth as a world power. As this European bloc develops independently of the United States and Russia, the plain truth keeps you informed with advanced articles. And now, as the European common market emerges economically and politically to shape the world, the plain truth brings you the dramatic story behind Europe's return to power, with articles like Europe, Supergiant of the 70s, and There's a New Europe Coming. The plain truth helps you keep ahead of events in this fast-moving world at a price we can all afford. It's free. The plain truth, after 39 years, still ahead of its time. Send your request to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.
For many years, I have told live audiences, as well as talking on the television and radio program, that a Middle Eastern conflagration of some sort and some Arab bloc of countries of some configuration would create or somehow perpetrate some sort of an overt act which would so deeply wound or afflict Europe, it's in rather vague biblical language which I'm going to show you, that it would cause a retaliation. Direct military presence, a military response from a European power in the Middle East. I want you to look at that prophecy, if you will, in Daniel, the 11th chapter. I'm going to read it to you, a few verses here. It begins in verse 40. This is the longest prophecy in all the Bible. About a third of the Bible is prophecy, and much of it remains to be fulfilled during this day. This is dated because it says, and at the time of the end. Now, that's a separate subject. Perhaps we can kid ourselves that we are not living in the close of an age. And this is not talking about the end of the world, incidentally. I do not believe in any such doctrine or philosophy as the complete destruction of this earth at all. I believe the Bible proves and demonstrates that we are not going to see any such thing occur, but that there are going to be cataclysms, that there will be an apocalyptic era out of which a completely new era and total new societies will grow. But the world's going to survive, and mankind is going to survive. It says, though, that at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships. Old biblical language about chariots and horsemen. Fine, but in the modern vernacular of our space age, that would obviously mean any kind of military equipment. It says ships. Well, we still have ships. Certainly it must include airplanes because the language is that he will come like a whirlwind. You don't have to involve airplanes just to fulfill that, because it's talking about the lightning-like attack. And that's interesting, and no necessary proof intended, only a side observation of the methods of warfare some peoples call lightning war. And with many ships, and shall enter into the countries, plural, and shall overflow and pass over. He, this king of the north, shall also enter into the glorious land that's got to be Palestine, Jerusalem the capital. In that sense, biblical prophecy always is from the viewpoint of Jerusalem and the area formerly called Palestine. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. Ammon, Ammon, well, Ammon is the capital city of Jordan. Who are the Edomites and Moabites? The Bible says they never migrated. Edom is Esau, meaning red, the brother of Jacob. Those peoples are still in the very same areas in the Middle East where they always were. The Bible shows they settled on their lees. That is a kind of a biblical description, just like wine vats set on their lees and gradually ferment. It says that his taste or his odor is still in him. He is still there. The Bible indicates that these peoples, the Arab nations, did not migrate to other parts of the earth, as did some of the northern 10 tribes of Israel, but they are still where they were. And it says, he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and Ethiopians shall be at his steps. An interesting prophecy. Now, formerly, and Bible commentaries would tell you this, they knew it meant the Seleucidae of Syria, Seleucus Nicator, and the Ptolemies, P-T-O-L-M-E-Y-S, a kind of a name for a successive dynasty or line of kings of Egypt. And there were these wars in the past. But this prophecy says that it's the time of the end. And it finally says that he will plant his tabernacles or his palaces, and actually it means fortresses or defense buildings and buttresses and the like, between the seas in the glorious holy mountain, meaning right in Palestine. Now, the funny thing is that in the New Testament, Jesus Christ of Nazareth's only specific warning to his people about a catalytic event in world geopolitics was that his people were to watch Jerusalem. He said, when you see Jerusalem surrounded with armies, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains, plural. That was a warning that when you see a heated up military confrontation, an encirclement of some sort, the presence of foreign troops from somewhere, who is this king of the north? Actually, I believe it means a great northern power, and that it has to mean a European power. People could disagree. Well, let's just wait and see what news finally tells us. What is going to happen? Here's an interesting statement from a well-known controversial journalist, William F. Buckley, Jr. Now, I hardly ever read what Mr. Buckley has to write. This was underlined and brought to me. It was published in the Los Angeles Times, and I live in the area where I take the Los Angeles Times, so I'm going to pass it on to you. He was speculating about Europe and the United States in the article entitled, "And What Has Europe Done for America Lately?" He went on to say that the Arab powers are punishing Western Europe for America's role in the Mideast as a principal supplier to Israel, the perennial target of a military machine deployed by the Soviet Union in Arabia. Everyone seeks nowadays to impose pressure through intermediaries, he said. The question arises as to why the intermediaries do not assert themselves. It mystifies me that Western Europe should think of itself as defenseless against the Arabs' use of blackmail. He's talking about Europe responding against the Arabs. We just read the 11th chapter of Daniel. Now notice, he said, the most extreme response to which the Europeans would be driven is war against the oil-producing states. If an abundance of oil can unite Syria and Saudi Arabia, the lack of oil can unite Italy and Scandinavia. A military expedition aimed not at taking over Arab territory, but at forcing the Arabs to export their oil at the market price, would be justified under extreme circumstances by the laws of nations. Europe is hurting and hurting badly. The United States is just beginning to hurt, and it's going to hurt a lot worse before it gets any better. But Europe is in a far worse condition than are we. And now, for the first time in my life, after having said so many hundreds of times over the radio about an eventual European intervention in the Middle East, I have seen it in print in the words of a man, a well-known, perhaps he is politically to the right, I don't know, they have told me he's ultra-conservative, I don't know him, I'm sure he doesn't know me, he doesn't read the plain truth to my knowledge, he is merely a political observer and a political columnist writing for, the big newspapers. But now I begin to see in the newspapers statements which seem to corroborate the 11th chapter of Daniel. Next time, I'm going to talk about how it's beginning to affect Japan and U.S. relations. In the meantime, get your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth Magazine without further procrastination and delay. Many of you have been intending to do it. You've been saying, yeah, I think I'll get around to writing for that magazine. If you wanted to know about the energy crisis in advance before it happened, you're already too late. Because the energy crisis is here, but if you'd been reading the Plain Truth for about the past 10 years, you would have known that it was coming and known it years in advance. So if you want to truly be ahead of the times, write for the Plain Truth Magazine. We'll have articles about Arab oil. We have an in-depth special coming up very quickly on the Middle East and Arab oil in the energy crisis and what it means to you on the domestic scene at home. And all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost. But tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.